All right, well, welcome at this episode. We're having a good laugh here. Well, again, cheers, gentlemen.
All right.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And cheers, everybody at home. So, we were having some laughs, but also we were having some pretty serious conversations about trafficking stuff, child exploitation stuff. And sad enough, these are things that we are dealing with every day within Shadow Dragon because we have a clientele that needs to deal with that. Now, you and I, we have been talking about child apps and how predators are active on that. I remember you talked about Roblox. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that I think, one of the biggest problems I think that people have in understanding what child exploitation looks like is, you know, a lot of people maybe think it's like they go to the grocery store and somebody grabs their kid out of the car or out of the cart and they run off with them or something like that. And, you know, the reality is that's generally not what happens. A lot of times it's a longer game these guys play. And they're drawn to the places that children are at. Mm-hmm. And so we generally think, oh, well, where are children at? You think at a playground, a school, a daycare, that kind of stuff. And realistically, that's true. And I'm sure there's those high profile stories where those things happen there, but that's really not where it's happening nowadays. It's happening on apps like Roblox. So Roblox has, and somebody can get in the comments and tell me I'm wrong, but I want to say the other day they hit 100 million concurrent users all at once. And you can get on that app and you can go into the search bar to look for groups and you can see role-playing shower buddy or role-playing face fart. And it'll be like groups where there's these people saying, you should sit on my face in this game and all this kind of stuff. And that's the obvious stuff. That's the obvious, like, oh my God, that's not cool at all. Mm-hmm. And then, but really what a lot of these guys are doing is they're getting into these apps, you know, things like, you know, it's like Fortnite, Roblox, you know, even just like kids hanging out and playing games with people on Xbox or something. And they just kind of become their friend. And that's really where a lot of the actual problem starts.
But it's like actually, I mean, it's long-term grooming.
It is, yeah, it is. And it's also kind of hidden from parents a lot. And so, I mean, I've talked to my kids. I've got a number of young kids. And one of the things I talk about a lot with them is if someone says, hey, this is a secret, or can you keep a secret? That's a huge red flag, right?
Totally.
And another big red flag is, you act older than you see. You seem a lot older than you are. Like, I didn't know you were 8. You seem like you're 15 or something, you know? And so there's a lot of red flags like that. And that's kind of, you know, that's really where the problem is happening from a grooming perspective. A lot of times is these apps, is these games and these kinds of things. And they seem relatively benign. And I think a lot of parents think they're safe. And they're really not, you know? And
I'll tell you a story. We were at a fundraiser a few years ago, actually. I think you were at the table with me. And it was for a nonprofit doing anti-human trafficking work. The guy sitting next to me, him and his wife, super successful, you know, like,
oh yeah,
they're that. Super successful folks, you know, like, he's an exec of a really big company. And I said, you know, hey man, how did you find out about this? How'd you get here? And him and his wife were like, well, basically our 16-year-old boy got kidnapped. And I was like, what? And then they were like, yeah, like basically we have been hyper vigilant on this. We've been all about anti-human trafficking stuff. We've warned our kids. We thought we had everything, all of our ducks in a row. And he's like, and what happened was, like, our son had been talking to somebody on like some video game for the last 3 or 4 years, and he finally decided, well, I'm gonna go meet with this guy. Goes and meets with the guy, and boom, kidnapped. local law enforcement couldn't do anything. The bureau couldn't do anything, or didn't, or, you know, I don't know the whole story there, but like, basically they just started Googling like what nonprofits can help, right? So anyway, the nonprofit that they went with was using our tools, and that's why we were there to kind of help out with the whole fundraising and everything. And the guy said, look, man, like these analysts had helped save this kid within like 48 hours or something. But the problem after that was just, and luckily he wasn't abused during the process, but like it was absolutely devastating to our family structure. I mean, just the chaos and like, I mean, just think about how you feel like when something's stolen out of your car. Likewise, your kid, right? You know? And it really hinged on this whole like long-term grooming activity, you know? And then you started looking into all the different video game stuff and like all the grooming stuff, like, or, you know, just text-based analysis on it, and started seeing all the roadblock stuff. And Roblox. I think that's super crazy, dude. Roblox, you know?
Roblox is pretty wild. I would say if you've got kids and they're playing that, you know, there needs to be guidelines for them, or just don't play it.
You know, basically it's any app where you can communicate with another individual.
I completely agree, but I think ones where children are naturally going to are going to be a little more hot. Yeah. But I agree with you. Obviously, anything where there's sort of a public interface that allows you to interact with someone, and then that turns to a private space.
Right.
So I think that's where a lot of that kind of grooming comes from. And then you also have just, you know, sort of a more predatory aspect to things where people, you can just get on like Instagram or Facebook or anywhere with sort of a social media platform and look for children who are complaining about their parents. Yeah. It's pretty easy to find. You can just type the search into the platforms. And then as soon as you see these, I could just send 50 messages in a second to all these kids that are mad at their parents. Whatever. Oh yeah, I went through the same thing. I know what you're going through, whatever. And then you start getting into some of the other red flags that is like buying gifts. Hey, I'm mad at my parents, my life sucks. And then somebody buys a $200 iPhone SE and mails it to them. Oh, now they're good, they care about me.
Yeah, but it's also about hiding in plain sight is what they do.
Yeah.
When I was building one of my courses, I was going into this topic because I think it's so important for every student to know about it. And just by going on YouTube, for example, and looking for young children getting a massage, and not looking for getting a massage. It is actual training videos on how to give children a massage after sports or something like that. But looking at the comments, just look in the comments. You would be amazed how much disturbing messages there are underneath. I would not miss a spot. Ooh, that, all these kind of like real nasty comments. Yeah. But that by itself is a great pivot point for any investigator. Because now you've got someone making a comment with a profile picture or an avatar, a username, and based upon that, I was able to uncover like at least two pedophile rings just by finding a video. And it makes sense, right? If you know where, if you try and place yourself in the shoes, if this is your jam, if this is what you crave, you will start looking for, let's say, children that are not wearing clothes or in bathing suits or something like that. And where do you find that content? Social media,
yeah.
Video streaming platforms. And just look in the comments, look at the friend connections that they have. And you will be amazed that in essence, it's not, everybody always thinks that when it comes to the cyber realm, everything is happening on the dark web or Tor or something like that.
Yeah.
Of course it's happening there.
There's a lot of crap there.
Well, yeah, so the objectively gonna get you arrested instantly stuff is there, the rest of it's not.
So, okay, so like for those that are listening or watching, you've got leads, you know, you've gone through a good process of writing a report that isn't crazy, it's, you know, logical, you've had your friend proofread it, where do you send it? Right, like, so that's my question, like, because I think a lot of people would be like, okay, how do I do some of that work legally and try to fight this, even if I'm not in a nonprofit or I'm not in a a group, but I want to practice OSN. Even though this is like pretty deep stuff.
It's a real good question because in Europe, most laws prohibit you just to view that content. But if you're an investigator, even if you're in law enforcement, there are only some special units that are allowed to view that content. Mm-hmm. But you need to view the actual content to do it. So that, again.
Building out some of that network, where they've built the report, what do they do with it?
So that's my question. I'll play the dumb guy here. It's like, I came out of the military. Never had to deal with this type of stuff, and this is very new to me. But so, can you expand? Like, how do you catch these guys? Like,
actually, that's a fantastic question because I'll get on my soapbox for a minute. I think that the funding around this stuff is not where it should be, and the reason is because catching a child predator is kind of hard. Catching someone who's making child exploitation material is extremely hard. I'm speaking very humbly about law enforcement, not in a bad way, but it's pretty easy to pull someone over and go, hey man, you're talking kind of funny, blowing this thing. Oh, we stopped a drunk driver, and that's good, right? It's pretty easy to go, oh look, you reek of weed, there's a bunch of drugs in the back of the car, we got you. Mm-hmm. That's easy. The process for building out what you're talking about, you started at the beginning of it, you have to think like the predator. You have to get ahead of the predator in the game, and then you have to deal with the content, which is really horrific. It's really bad and nobody likes it. And then you have laws that are even blocking you if you wanted to do it that are limiting to that process. And then you have to build a case out, and if you're targeting the producer, the one who's making most of the bad content or executing on a lot of this stuff, they're the smartest ones. The ones that are consuming it, they're easier. But even then, we're still in a game of going, I have to go to YouTube, I have to find the comments, I build out the platforms, I see what they're saying. And until I see actual content that's illegal, I'm not.
But like, even if you see that content, you're in a bad situation, right? Investigator, right? For me, I got pulled into a few different cases where another person in InfraGuard, which is, we can get into what that is later, but like InfraGuard, an InfraGuard member was like, hey, we've got this piece of evidence on this computer. Can you figure out what else may be connected to this or what this means? And it wasn't a picture. It was like this, piece of text or whatever. And so, I was able to like analyze that, figure out people a part of a group without having to look at anything and say, oh, what they're talking about is obviously super weird and creepy and bad, and then hand that back over to them and they hand it over to the FBI or whatever, right? That happened a few different times, and there's a fine line there, man. Like there, you go back into, all the way back to like late 90s, early 2000s, there was a group called EHAP, Ethical Hackers Against Pedophilia, right? EHAP.org. Some of those guys, it was a vigilante type thing to help identify pedophiles and take those dudes out or hand that over to law enforcement. And even like the collection methods that those guys did, even back then, some of those guys in EHAP got in trouble by how they collected the information or they even had the information. Like, it's this weird thing. And so I think you gotta be really careful with that. I don't really have an answer if there's a picture, and you're not in a corporate environment or you're not in a, in the right legal structure, how are you gonna bring that to law enforcement? Is there a tips line for this? I don't really know, right?
Well, technically there is a solution. For all the known content out there, you could hash that, all the files could generate a unique hash, and you can share that hash list with any company, and they could throw that in their EDR or something like that, mm-hmm. and just start matching it on hashes so they don't have to see the content and you get that hit.
Oh, I'm just talking about like how to turn that stuff over if an investigator, an investigator is like building out that dossier on those dudes in the YouTube comments, like, okay, cool. They've built that out. They've got a few findings. They've got a few things that are like, this is bad. We should look into this. Who are they going to turn that over? Are they going to turn over to NITMIC, the Bureau, or like, I think that's the question to be answered somewhere.
That's what I was getting at is right now the structure is not good for this. And I don't mean it's not good for the United States. It's not good for the world. And if you look at a lot of the task forces that work on this, they actually are in different countries. And the reason they're in different countries is because each country has different rules around what you can and can't do. And so it's very common for these task forces in the US to find somebody and then immediately go to the UK or somewhere or the Australians and say, hey, we've got this guy who's an American, but he's doing, you know, XYZ, but we can't mess with it. Like, we can't touch the actual crime. And so, and that's absurd, in my opinion. And so there's two big problems, I think. Problem one is we're not putting enough money into it. And I know that's easy.
So let me stop you there, because there's a hearing coming up on January 31st in the Senate. Where would you put funding? Where could we put funding?
So.
I'll add it after you.
Like, okay, funding absolutely has to go in identifying analysts who are capable of this. Because the type of individual who can deal with this sort of thing is not a normal person. It's not, if I were to put 20 people in this room, maybe there's one who would be okay with working through this and be functional. And when I say okay, notice I said okay, I didn't say good with it and their life is good and that's their job. They're okay with it. They can deal with it. The other 19, probably not. So it would be identifying that and then the training around how do we train someone to build a case out that's this complex? Because it's a very complicated process. Like I said, it's you start talking about crime scenes and you talk about a murder thing and it's like, okay, grab the cell phone data off the scene, do the forensic analysts the analytics on what we have in the room. And it's all these very simple things. It's all not simple, but it's very like a routine thing. And then you look at like, I know that's very hard. Anybody listening that has to do that, I know that's hard. But you start talking about, hey, I need you to find child exploitive producers on the internet. Yeah. Where do you, it's not a crime scene. You have to find the crime scene. You have to build a path
it's a difference. And I'm going to put this kind of only in the US context because I don't know how it is outside the U.S., right? Like, so in the U.S., we have law enforcement. Yeah. Law enforcement is there to enforce what they've been told to go enforce by the people they represent. And most of the intelligence capabilities has fallen over to the Bureau and some to DHS, right? But largely, like, local police departments and sheriffs, you know, sheriff departments, are not going to have an intelligence capability. So, like, I think that there's a hybrid thing that has to happen. Like, one, an intelligence capability for local law enforcement that's, you know, somehow federal dollars are going to, or federal dollars or state dollars are going to creating that.
And that's where it's going with that.
Yeah.
We have to identify who can do it and we have to train them. And then the process for how to function in that world has got to be set up in a way where we're geared to be successful,
right?
Without, you know, just throwing away the Constitution or whatever legal apparatus we have in the area. Because the thing about exploitative material is I think it's the least politically charged thing out there. I think if I bring the most left-leaning Democrat and the most right-leaning Republican in here and I say, hey, what do you guys think about child exploitation material? They're both going to say,
oh yeah, super bad.
I hate that. That's the worst. And it's like, okay, we agree on that. Let's create a better program. So going back to what you're saying is like, the funding should be focused on identifying who can do it, figuring out how we can create a better system around investigations, and then training those investigators. Mm. And then after that, supporting those investigators because they're dealing with crime that's beyond, you said it yourself, you know, in the army or your military stuff. And that's the kind of thing, like when you, you know, we all know this, when you go tell someone, hey, this guy abused a kid, I mean, people will say, I'd kill him, you know, that. And it's like, but if I say, hey, this guy's a Russian who fought against me in a war, he'd be like, yeah, that was his job, but he's a prisoner now, it's okay. You know, like, it's the mentality is very different. And so I think that it's a combination of a few things, but if the public doesn't care enough about it.
Yeah, but that's it. I think the impact on society, that's what is not helping here in getting this acknowledged by society. Because if I see, let's say, well, look at, for example, for me as a European, we see footage coming from San Francisco all the time because there's so much, let's say, low lives and shit going on there. Yeah, pardon my French.
Like there's like a shit map.
Yeah. But that impacts society. It's visible. It's physical. You can see it. Okay. And child abuse, when I just go ring any doorbell in any typical street and just ask someone, did you ever encounter a form of child pornography? And no one has ever seen it. They've heard about it, but it doesn't impact them. But also the financial impact is not there.
Well, it's not visible.
I think it's definitely, there's definitely a decay in society when, like, when the child exploitation is growing.
It is growing.
We know it's growing. You can look at like, you can look at the data of like how much content is on just Tor, right?
It's like 30% of it at this
point. Yeah, how much is our Tor collection? We've got Tor collection. We've had it for years and years and years. We've got stats on like, on our redaction engine that auto identifies stuff before it ever gets into any systems. We've kept stats on like everything that we can identify that by based on keyword or image or, you know, skin pigment or whatever. Like what's, yeah, there's all these techniques that we've been using to watch and drop that at the door before anything gets inserted into our platform. What's the increase in that over the years?
Oh, right? It's up hundreds and hundreds of percent. Like, you know, Tor used to be a place where I would tell people, oh, the dark web's where a bunch of nerds hang out and argue over malware and try to steal credit cards. But that's changing. It's turning into just forums of child exploitation material. I bet we'll hit 50% in the next year or two.
Like 50% of all content coming from Tor.
So do you think that there, we're older, right? Do you think there's some kind of like cognitive dissonance with the demographics? You know, like maybe I'm ignorant to it, but I feel like it doesn't happen enough to, you know, have a lot of attention given to it. I know it's a horrible thing, but how do we bridge that gap? Like, how do we talk more about it in a constructive way?
I think one of the ways that helps with that is I think, you know, you always want to be careful of, you've seen the St. Jude's commercials with the kids.
Yeah.
They're like sick and you're like, oh my God, that sucks.
Yeah, I just take my money.
Yeah, take my money.
Yeah, so yeah.
I do actually think there's an aspect to that because a lot of the people that are victims of this, and this is absolutely horrific, but a lot of them actually kind of go back into it because they don't know anything else. They've been conditioned to the point that they will go find a boyfriend pimp or whatever and just kind of go back to it because they don't know a lot. And so from a societal impact, and I'm being cold and kind of, you know, societal discussion about it, but they're just kind of stuck. They're in this bad place when they could just be raising a family or being a, being a professional or whatever. And so it's like there's this huge impact on society just purely from just a dollars perspective, but not the way we see. We got this cartel and we got all the cars and we got all the guns and we sell them. And so, but well, hang on one sec. So, right. So the thing about how do we bridge that gap? I do think that people need to see it more. And Nico, you said it, they don't see it a lot, But if people did see it and recognize the impact it has on people, and people recognize that when they internalize it and think about their own family and their own kids and their friends.
Maybe we should approach it as a disease, because if there's COVID, now everybody's paying attention and we're trying to find a cure and we're trying to save the world.
Yeah.
Now just think of this concept as, hey, we have a lot of people that we can diagnose as being very ill.
I don't know if it's a disease. I don't know if it's as much of a disease as much as it is possibly as a poison that people somehow have been ingesting to get to that point. Like, I feel like it's somewhat of a progression, because I remember this is probably 2005, 2006, maybe even sooner than that, maybe 2004. I was talking to a FBI agent guy about this, because we just helped get all these dudes arrested. And I was like, dude, so what's the deal? Why is this growing? And he was like, well, I can tell you based on the data I have is where new internet bandwidth goes in rural communities, child exploitation always goes up. And I don't know why, but I would assume that it has to do with, okay, now you have high-speed internet, we're gonna look at porn. And then porn turns into like another thing, you know, like I think there's a progression there. He argued that, I said, so is there a progression from, you know, softcore porn to hardcore porn to like, you know, all these other things? And he was like, well, the data that we've analyzed and we've asked the psychologist, they say that like they can't make a total correlation. It's just kind of like this jump to crazy, you know? And he's like, but I can tell you what is after that. And what is after that is the new beginning of bad. It's they start, it's not that they're fantasizing about just pedophilia and kids, it's they're also starting to fantasize about violence and killing. And, you know, so he was talking about how he, you know, they went and did this raid and they found this guy's journal and it just said all this crazy stuff about new things that he was writing down, and which are effectively new desires that are super perverted, super horrible things that were the next branch to probably serial killing stuff, right?
Well, it's just how some people are born. Because when I hear you talk and when you're explaining this story, my mind immediately went to, recently we had a mass shooting in the Netherlands where a guy, we're not talking about pedophilia here, but this is just a guy that started with molesting his rabbit and then started molesting something else. And every time he tried to top it, just to get that, maybe a dopamine hit or a rush, until someone at his school gave him a bad reflection. He was like, okay, grabbing a gun, shooting everybody. It was a doctor, a very knowledgeable doctor, aspiring doctor. And just, that's exactly what you're saying. It's just some people, I think they were just born with a form, I don't know, where it's just in their DNA. That's just what they will become. And I think it gets accelerated with what we are exposed with every day.
Oh, totally. Just like whatever,
scrolling,
scrolling. Whatever you feed,
yeah,
will get bigger.
Yeah, and keep in mind, right? I have done research myself during the high rise of Islamic State, where the YouTube algorithm sucks you in and radicalizes you more. We discussed this before, mm-hmm. where I start watching one Islamic State video, and then the algorithm will say, oh, so you're interested in this. Let me show you more.
So you're getting back, you know, we're going kind of going full circle here back to, we have to try to look at some of the unintended consequences of some of the AI algorithms.
Oh, absolutely.
And or computer science algorithms that are going to push people into echo chambers. Yep. We didn't have that as such a pronounced issue till after what, 2008, 2009, 2010. And we know that like the pattern that's after that is dehumanization. Yep. Like your pattern about the guy doing whatever with animals and then shooting people, it's still the same patternality of dehumanization, yep. likely based on a guy who is living a subjective reality that is only defined by like feeding his own desires to feel better in life. Like, where's that black hole? Like, so what can you do about that in Congress with law enforcement and you know, funding and whatnot? Like, I think it's complex because you need an intelligence capability that's actually going to be moving the needle, not just milking stats to get funding, right?
Yeah.
And you need it to be regionally reallocated. I mean, DHS is a good structure, right? But like, they're definitely better than how the Bureau is working it. But most of all, that is reactive in nature, not proactive as a domestic intelligence capability.
Well, you talk about, you know, the difference between going after child exploitation versus a cartel, and I think of like, you know, the big sprawl of like, you know, 10,000 kilos of cocaine on the boat, like, yay, we got them, yay. But no one talks about, you know, the success of countering a child exploitation case. So what if,
that's, you know, that's actually why I was talking about the people that come out of that.
Yeah.
Those stories are I think really important.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's people that are rescued and do get away from it and get away from the world I know a number of people that have been rescued from that, and like those stories need to be out there because, you know, I think that most people are not gonna get mad. Like if I just pulled out a mirror and did a line of coke on this podcast, most people wouldn't be too mad. If I started doing some child exploitive stuff, there'd be a drone flying by this window trying to shoot me or something, you know? So it's like, you know, the impact to society and just what is right and wrong is like, that needs to be highlighted strongly. And it's not just about money. It's about not allowing chaos or evil in a society or with people or with your own kids or with,
I mean, it's subjectivity versus objectivity too, though. You know, there's a definite tension between that.
It also has to do with feeling uncomfortable, because always when it comes to the topic sex, everybody has sex, everybody watches porn, but no one ever talks about it. Never, ever. It's just a no-go area.
Yeah, nobody walks out.
Imagine talking about, but imagine talking about child abuse or child pornography. Yeah. That's even a more off-topic topic. Well,
that's exactly why I'm going into the concept of the survivors' voices being amplified more, because I think that would help us with sort of solving that problem. And I really, truly believe it's a problem that most people, the majority of society, is on board with.
I think a lot of people think that it's just not gonna happen to them, not happen to their kids. And so what do they do with that? They end up giving their kids a freaking phone, right?
I play Roblox.
Okay, but I haven't given my kids phones, right? There's a lot of reasons for that. You know, I don't wanna give the world access to my kid, number one. And then number two, like, I kind of don't want to deal with any chaos that comes from it, right? Like, I want them to reach out to people. I want them to not be hit by this dopamine hit of like,
we do a whole podcast.
Right,
on,
but no, on yeah, that. I'm just explaining some of my own stuff, right? So, but I think like parents need to think about like, look, man, you're raising adults. You're not raising kids. Your job is to protect them, and some of that protection has to do with the media that you allow them to get onto. Like, I know you have things super locked down and you have a super surveillance system on all your kids' devices. Elliot needs to write that up as a how to do this, right? Like, cause I haven't even done it yet, but
I just got work on a podcast. That's right. The first time that's happened.
Task list, we're putting out a PDF on that at some point.
We can do that.
And that will help parents though, man. Like, other than just binary Dan saying like, no, no phone, you know, like I think it's the best option, but let's give them a PDF of like, okay, how can you lock this down so you can help monitor your kids, let them use their devices, but also protect them, because you do need to protect them.
Yeah.
You know?
So I agree with you, Dan. I'll say one more thing before we kind of wrap up, but when we talk about like children and things like what you're saying, the number one thing, I know this is going to be like professors in the 70s talking to kids kind of thing. But if you have good communications with your kids, yeah. and you can say, hey, yeah. did you play with your friends online today? Did you play some Overwatch? Did you play some Fortnite? What happened? Did you win the game? You know, and or, win the game. I sound like a super boomer, but you know, how'd you do? And then be like, you know, what was happening? Did you have any drama? Did anybody? And it's like those kind of conversations will surface things. I've already seen that with my own children a couple times.
Yeah, totally.
I was like, oh yeah, this person was asking me to come over to this other game and draw some pictures or something. I'm like, excuse me? Like, did you go? Well, no, I didn't. But the if I didn't have that communication open, and I think it's very important that you alluded to it earlier, people don't talk about sex. They don't talk about things that are uncomfortable. A lot of kids don't feel confident or comfortable talking to their parents about what's going on in their life. And as long as you're only jumping on the things that are dangerous,
yeah,
and not just like, well, your friend sounds like a moron. You have to like, oh,
no,
sorry.
I mean, for us, we have a rule with the kids is, or, you know, we don't tell them it's a rule, but we basically say, look, man, if somebody brings up the topic of private parts or secrets.
Secrets is a big one, yeah.
You know? You just come and talk to us because the only people who can talk about that kind of stuff is within the family. Like it's your mom and your dad. Yeah. If it's your uncle, your niece, your nephew, like all of them, that's like, this is the wall of trust, you know, right here, you know?
I just really wanted to just put that out there is like, if, you know, if your kids are online or, and they are going to be at some point, even if you kick your phone away, they're going to have one eventually. It's the open, it's the communication aspect and making sure that you're not shaming them and you're being kind to them when they do screw up and saying, well, that wasn't the best thing, but let's talk about why. And I think that's really important. So.
Last comment. I think that's spot on because we are losing lack of interest in our own children because we are so connected to our own devices. I'm guilty of it myself, where I've had numerous times where my daughter's saying, hey, I'm talking to you. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Oops.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And that's just the world we're living in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely. Yeah.
No, I think that, I mean, we talk about the progression of a child exploiter or whatever, but, you know, I think about the data that we have. Like, what if we published that and talked about it and kind of flipped that script? Like, what if we expose more people to the fact that it is out there, because I would never think, you know, I'm guilty of it myself. Like, that would never happen to me. You know, my kids are too young to have phones or video games yet, but this is frightening to me.
We can absolutely do something like that. We've got some really good data on that. And you know, Dan, you mentioned publishing a guide. I have no problem writing that down. Mm-hmm. I've talked a number of times about the red flags I talked about on the podcast. You know,
basic upset guide for your kids.
Yeah, but we can absolutely do that. It's pretty straightforward. We could use Roblox. We can use data from Fortnite. We can use data from a lot of different things to show, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. But
all right, I think that's it for today.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.